This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Nothing More by Anna Todd. Read by Jason Carpenter.
Chapter 1. My life is pretty simple. I don't have too many complications. I'm a happy person. These things are known. The first three thoughts that go through my mind each day are, it's less crowded here than I thought. I hope Tessa is off work today so we can hang out. I miss my mom. Yes, I'm a sophomore at New York University, but my mom is one of my best friends. I miss home a lot. It helps to have Tessa around. She's the closest thing to family I have out here. I know college students do this all the time. They leave home and can't wait to be away from their hometowns. But not me. I happen to like mine, even if it's not where I grew up. I didn't mind living in Washington for my senior year and then my first year of college. It was becoming my home. I had a family there and found a new best friend. The only and biggest thing missing was Dakota, my longtime girlfriend. So when she got accepted into one of the best ballet academies in the country, I agreed to move to New York City with her. I had a plan at the time I applied to NYU. It just didn't work out the way it was supposed to. I was supposed to move here and start my future with her. I had no idea that she would decide she wanted to spend her first year at college single. I was devastated. I still am. But I want her to be happy, even if it's not with me. The city's chilly in September, but there's barely any rain compared to Washington State. So that's something, at least. As I walk to work, I check my phone, like I do about 50 times a day. My mom's pregnant with my little sister, and I want to be sure that if anything happens, I can get on a plane and be there for her quickly. My mom and Ken chose the name Abigail, and I can't wait to meet the little one. I've never really been around babies, but little Abby is already my favorite baby in the world. However, so far the only messages from my mom have been pictures of the amazing things she whips up in the kitchen. Not emergencies, but man, I miss her cooking. The streets are mobbed as I make my way to work. I'm waiting at a crosswalk with a crowd of people, mostly tourists with heavy cameras around their necks. I laugh to myself when a teenage boy holds up a giant iPad to take a selfie. I will never understand this impulse. When the crosswalk starts flashing its red countdown, I turn up the volume on my headphones. Out here, I pretty much wear headphones all day. The city is so much louder than I had anticipated, and I find it helpful to have something that blocks out some of the noise and at least colors those sounds that get in with something I like. Today it's Hozier. I even wear the headphones while working, in one ear at least, so I can still hear the coffee orders shouted to me. I'm a little distracted today by two men, both dressed in pirate outfits and screaming at each other, and as I walk into the shop, I bump into Aiden, my least favorite co-worker. He's tall, much taller than me, and he has this white blonde hair that makes him look like Draco Malfoy, so he kind of creeps me out. On top of his Draco resemblance, he happens to be a little rude sometimes. He's nice to me, but I see the way he looks at the girls who come in to grind. He acts like the coffee shop is named after a club rather than coffee grounds. The way he smiles down at them, flirting and making them squirm under his handsome gaze, I find it all pretty off-putting. He's not that handsome, actually. Maybe if he was nicer, I could see it. Watch it, man, Aiden mumbles, slapping my shoulder like we're crossing a football field together in matching jerseys. He's making record time in annoying me today. But brushing it off, I head into the back and tie my yellow apron around my waist and check my phone. After I clock in, I find Posey, a girl who I'm supposed to be training for a couple of weeks. She's nice. Quiet, but she's a hard worker, and I think it's kind of cute that she always takes the free cookie we offer her each training day as an incentive to be a little happier during the shift. Most newbies decline it, but she's eaten one every single day this week, sampling the whole range: chocolate, chocolate macadamia, sugar, and some mystery greenish flavor that I think is some gluten-free, all-natural locavore thing. Hey, I say, smiling at her where she leans against the ice machine. Her reddish hair is tucked behind her ears, and she's reading the back of one of the bags of ground coffee. When she looks up at me, she smiles a quick greeting, then returns her eyes to the bag.
"It still makes no sense that they charge $15 for a thing of coffee this small," she says, tossing the bag to me.
I barely catch it, and then it nearly slips from my hands, but I grab it tightly. "We," I correct her with a laugh, and set the bag down on the break table where it came from. "We charge that." "I haven't worked here long enough to be included in the we," she teases, and grabs a hairband off her wrist and lifts her curly reddish-brown hair into the air behind her. It's a lot of hair, and she ties it up neatly, then nods her signal that she's ready to work. Posey follows me out to the floor and waits by the cash register. She's mastering taking customers' orders this week, and will likely be making the drinks next. I like taking orders the most because I would rather talk to people than burn my fingers on that espresso machine, like I do every shift. I'm putting everything in order at my station when the bell attached to the door sounds. I look over to Posey to see if she's ready, and sure enough, she's already perked up, all set to greet the morning's caffeine addicts. Two girls approach the counter, chatting loudly. One of the voices strikes me, and I look over at them to see Dakota. She's dressed in a sports bra, loose shorts, and bright sneakers. She must have just finished a run. If she were leaving for a dance class, she'd be in a one-piece and tighter shorts. And she would look just as good. She always does. Dakota hasn't come in here for a few weeks, and I'm surprised to see her now. It makes me nervous, my hands shaking, and I find myself poking at the computer screen for absolutely no reason. Her friend Maggie sees me first. She taps Dakota on her shoulder, and my ex turns to me, a big smile on her face. Her body is coated in a light layer of sweat, and her black curls are wild in a bun on her head. "I was hoping you'd be working." She waves to me and then to Posey. She was? I don't know what to make of this. I know that we agreed to be friends, but I can't tell if this is just friendly chatting or something more. Maggie waves too. "Hey, Landon." I smile at both of them and ask them what they'd like to drink. "Iced coffee, extra cream," the duo says at once. They're dressed nearly identically, but Maggie is easily overshadowed by Dakota's glowing caramel skin and bright brown eyes. I go into automatic mode, grabbing two plastic cups and shoving them into the ice bin with a smooth scooping motion, then pulling up the pitcher of pre-made coffee and pouring it into the cups. Dakota is watching me. I can sense her eyes on me, making me feel quite awkward. So when I notice that Posey is watching me too, I realize I should, probably, explain to her what the heck I'm doing. "You just pour this over ice. The evening shift makes it the night before so it can get cold and not melt the ice," I say. It's really basic, what I'm telling her, and I almost feel foolish saying it in front of Dakota. We aren't on bad terms at all, just not hanging out and talking like we used to. I completely understood when she ended our 3-year relationship. She was in New York City with new friends and new surroundings. I didn't want to hold her back, so I kept my promise and stayed friends with her. I've known her for years and will always care about her. She was my second girlfriend, but the first real relationship I've had up to now. "Dakota?" Aiden's voice overpowers mine as I start to ask them if they want me to add whipped cream, something I do to my own drinks. Confused, I watch as Aiden reaches over the counter and grabs Dakota's hand. He lifts their hands in the air, and with a big smile, she twirls in front of him. Then, taking a glance at me, she inches away just a bit and says more neutrally to him, "I didn't know you worked here." I look at Posey to distract myself from eavesdropping on their conversation, then pretend like I'm looking at the schedule on the wall behind her. It's really none of my business who she has friendships with. "I thought I mentioned it last night," Aiden says, and I cough to distract everyone from the little squeak that comes out of me. Fortunately, no one seems to notice except Posey, who tries her best to hide her smile. I don't look at Dakota, even though I can sense she's uncomfortable. In reply to Aiden, she laughs the laugh she gave my grandma upon opening her Christmas gift 1 year. That cute noise. Dakota made my grandma so happy when she laughed at the cheesy singing fish plastered to a fake wooden plank. When she laughs again, I know she's really uncomfortable. Wanting to make this whole situation less awkward, I hand her the two coffees with a smile and tell her I hope to see her again soon. Before she can answer, I smile again and go into the back room, turning the sound up on my headphones. For a couple of minutes, I wait for the bell to ring again, signaling Dakota and Maggie's exit, before I realize that I probably won't hear it over the sound of yesterday's hockey game playing in my ear. Even with only one bud in, the cheering crowd and slaps of sticks would overpower an old brass bell. I go back out to the floor and find Posey rolling her eyes at Aiden as he shows off his milk-steaming skills to her. The way a cloud of steam floats in front of his white blonde hair makes him look even weirder to me.
"He said they're in school together at that dance academy he goes to," Posey whispers when I approach.
I freeze and look toward Aiden, who is oblivious, lost in his own apparently glorious world.
"You asked him?"
I say, impressed and a little worried about what his answers would be to other questions involving Dakota. Posey nods, grabbing a metal cup to rinse. I follow her to the sink, and she turns on the hose.
"I saw the way you acted when he held her hand, so I thought I'd just ask what was going on with them."
She shrugs, causing her big mass of curly hair to bounce slightly. Her freckles are lighter than most redheads I've seen, and are scattered across the top of her cheeks and the bridge of her nose. Her lips are big, they pout a tad, and she's nearly my height. These were things I noticed on her third day of training, when I suppose my interest flared up for a moment. "I dated her for a while," I admit to my new friend, and hand her a towel to dry the cup with.
"Oh, I don't think they're dating. She would be insane to date a Slytherin."
When Posey smiles, my cheeks flare and I laugh along with her. "You noticed it too?" I ask. Reaching between us, I grab a pistachio mint cookie and offer it to her. She smiles, taking it from my hand and eating half of it before I even manage to get the lid back on the canister. Chapter 2. When my shift is over, I clock out and grab two to-go cups from the counter to make my usual departure drink. Two macchiatos, one for me and one for Tess. Not just your ordinary macchiato, though. I add three pumps of hazelnut and one shot of banana-flavored syrup. It sounds gross, but you wouldn't believe how good it is. I made it by accident one day, mixing up the vanilla and banana bottles, but my random concoction has become my favorite drink. Tess's too. And now, Posey's. To keep our young college bodies properly nourished, I'm responsible for the refreshments and Tessa provides dinner most nights, with leftovers from Lookout, the restaurant she's at. Sometimes the meal is still warm, but even if it's not, the food there is so good that it's edible hours later. We both managed to drink good coffee and eat gourmet food on a college budget, so it's a pretty sweet setup we have going on. Tess is working a late shift tonight, so I take my time in closing down the shop. It's not that I can't be home without her, but I just don't have any reason to rush, and this will keep me from thinking too hard about Dakota and Snake Dude. Sometimes I like the silence of an empty home, but I've never lived alone before, and often the buzzing of the refrigerator and the clanging of steam pipes throughout the quiet apartment drives me to the point of insanity. I find myself waiting for the noise of a football game playing from my stepdad's study, or the smell of maple coming from my mom baking in the kitchen. I've nearly finished my coursework for the week. The first few weeks of my sophomore year are completely different from my freshman year. I'm happy to be finished with the tedious required freshman courses and be able to start my early childhood education track. It makes me finally feel like I'm getting closer to my career as an elementary school teacher. I've read two books this month. I've seen all the good movies that are out, and Tessa keeps the place too clean for me to have any chores to do around the apartment. Basically, I have nothing useful to do with my time, and I haven't made many friends outside of Tessa and a couple of co-workers at Grind. With the exception of Posey, maybe, I don't think I could actually spend time with any of them outside of the coffee shop. Timothy, a guy in my social studies class, is cool. He was wearing a Thunderbirds jersey on the second day of the semester, and we struck up a conversation over my hometown hockey team. Sports and fantasy novels are my go-tos when socializing with strangers, something that I'm not the best at to begin with. My life is pretty uneventful. I take the subway across the bridge to campus, back home to Brooklyn, walk to work, walk home from work. It's become a pattern, a repeated series of events that are completely uneventful. Tessa claims that I'm in a funk, that I need to make some new friends and have some fun. I would tell her to follow her own advice, but I know that it's easier to focus on the overgrown grass in your neighbor's yard than to mow your own. Despite my mom's and Tessa's strong opinion on my lack of a social life, I enjoy myself. I like my job and my classes this semester. I like living in a somewhat cool part of Brooklyn, and I like my new college. Sure, it could be better, I know, but everything in my life is okay, simple and easy. No complications, no obligations, aside from being a good son and friend. I check the clock on the wall and cringe when I notice it's not even 10 yet.
I'd kept the doors open longer than usual for a group of women talking about divorce and babies.
There were a lot of ohs and oh noes, so I figured I would leave them in peace until they solved one another's life problems and were ready to go. At a quarter after 9, they left, their table covered in napkins, cold half-drunk coffee, and half-eaten pastries. I didn't mind the mess because it kept me busy for a few extra minutes. I spent so much time closing, meticulously placing stacks of napkins into metal canisters, sweeping the floor one straw wrapper at a time, and walking as slowly as I possibly could to fill up the ice bins and canisters of ground coffee. Time isn't on my side tonight. I'm beginning to question my relationship with Dakota. Yeah, time rarely works in my favor, but tonight it's teasing me more than usual. Each minute that passes is 60 seconds of mockery. The little hand on the clock keeps ticking slowly, but those ticks don't seem to add up. It doesn't feel like time is moving at all. I begin playing that elementary school game of holding my breath in 30-second increments to pass the time. After a few minutes of this, I'm bored and move to the back room with the cashier drawer to count the money from the day. The shop is silent, except for the buzzing of the ice machine in the back room. Finally, it's 10, and I can't stall any longer. Before leaving, I glance around the shop one last time. I'm positive I didn't miss anything. Not one coffee bean is out of place. I usually don't close alone. My schedule alternates between closing with Aiden and closing with Posey. Posey offered to stay with me, but I overheard her talking about having trouble finding a sitter for her sister. Posey is quiet and she doesn't share much of her life with me, but from what I can gather, the little girl seems to be at the center of it. I lock the safe and turn on the security system before I close and lock the door behind me. It's cold out tonight. A slight chill comes from the water and settles over Brooklyn. I like being close to the water, and for some reason the river makes me feel some sort of detachment from the hustle of the city. Despite its proximity, Brooklyn is nothing like Manhattan. A group of 4, 2 women and 2 men, walks past as I lock up and step out onto the sidewalk. I watch as the 2 couples split into hand-holding pairs. The taller of the guys is wearing a Browns jersey, and I wonder if he's checked their stats for the season. If he had, he probably wouldn't be prancing around in that thing with such pride. I watch them as I follow in their wake. The Browns fan is louder than the rest of the bunch, and has an obnoxiously deep voice to boot. He's drunk, I think. I cross the street to get away from them and call my mom to check on her. By check on her, I mean, let her know that I'm fine and that her only child survived another day in the big city. I ask how she's feeling, but in typical fashion, she pushes that aside to ask about me. My mom wasn't as worried about the idea of me moving as I thought she would be. She wants me to be happy, and going to New York to be with Dakota made me happy. Well, it was supposed to. My move was supposed to be the glue that would keep our fraying relationship together. I thought that the distance was the thing that was chipping away at us. But I hadn't realized it was freedom she craved, Her freedom-seeking came so unexpected to me because I'd never acted possessive with her. I never tried to control her or tell her what to do. I'm just not like that. Since the day the spunky girl with the noodles for hair moved in next door, I knew there was something special about her. Something so special and real, and I never, ever wanted to hide that. How could I? Why would I? I reinforced her independence and pushed for her to keep her sharp tongue and strong opinions. For the entire 5 years we were together, I treasured her strength and tried to give her everything she needed. When she was afraid to move from Saginaw, Michigan to the Big Apple, I found a way to calm her fear. I've had the experience of a few moves myself. I moved from Saginaw to Washington just before my senior year of high school. I constantly reminded her of her very good reasons for wanting to go to NYC, how much she loved dance and how talented she was at it. Not a day passed when I didn't remind her how great she was and how proud of herself she should be. With blistered toes and bleeding feet, she rehearsed day and night. Dakota has always been one of the most motivated people I've ever met. Excellent grades came easier to her than they did to me, and she always had a job when we were teens. When my mom was working and couldn't drop her off, she rode her bike a mile to her cashier's job at a truck stop. Once I turned 16 and got my license, she let her dad pawn her bicycle for extra cash, and I gladly drove her. And yet, in her family life, I suppose freedom was something Dakota never felt like she had. Her dad tried to keep her and her brother, Carter, prisoner in their red brick house. The sheets that he tacked over the windows couldn't keep either of his children inside. When she got to New York, she saw a new type of living. Watching her dad wither away into nothing with anger and booze wasn't living. Trying to wash away the guilt of her brother's death wasn't living. She realized that she had never truly lived. I had begun living the day I met her, but for her it wasn't the same. As much as the destruction of our relationship hurt, I didn't hold it against her. I still don't. But I can't say that it didn't cause me real pain in addition to erasing the future we had mapped out together. I thought I would come to New York and share an apartment with her. I had assumed that every morning I would wake up to her legs wrapped around mine, the sweet smell of her hair in my face. I thought we would make memories while learning the ways of the city together. We were supposed to take strolls through parks and pretend to understand the art hanging in fancy museums. I expected so much when I started planning my move here. I expected it to be the beginning of my future, not the end of my past. To her credit, she saw things coming, saw her feelings for what they were, and broke up with me before I moved out here. Rather than try to fake it for some time before it blew up in both of our faces, she was honest with me. Still, by the time she finally ended things, I was too invested in the move to change my mind. I had already transferred schools and put a deposit on an apartment. I don't regret it, and looking back, I think it was what I needed. I'm not completely enthralled by the city yet. Its charm hasn't really hypnotized me like it does some, and I don't think I'll stay here after I graduate. But I like it enough for now. I would like to settle somewhere quiet, with a big yard and sunlight that makes everything gorgeous and browns my skin. It helps that Tessa moved here with me. I'm not happy about the circumstances that brought her, but I'm glad I could provide an escape for her. Tessa Young was the first friend I made at Washington Central University, and she sort of ended up being the only one I had up until I left. She was the first and only friend I made in Washington, and vice versa. Her freshman year was rough. She fell in love and got her heart broken almost simultaneously. I was in a weird place, between my stepbrother, who I was trying to build a relationship with, and my best friend, Tessa, whose wounds came from the same man. I opened my door to Tessa the moment she asked, and I would do it again. I didn't mind the idea of sharing my apartment with her, and I knew it would help her. I like my place as the friend, the nice guy. I've been the nice guy my entire life, and I'm more comfortable in that role than any other. I don't need to be the center of attention. In fact, I recently realized that I go out of my way to avoid any situation that would put me there. I'm known for being the supporting act, the supportive friend and boyfriend, and I'm perfectly okay with that. When everything went down in Michigan, I wanted to suffer alone. I didn't want anyone to bleed with me, especially not Dakota. Her pain was inevitable, and no matter what I did, I couldn't fix it. I had to let her bleed, and I was forced to sit back and watch as her world was ripped apart by a tragedy that I tried my damnedest to prevent. She was my bandage, and I was her net. I caught her when she was falling, and we will be bonded, whether it's by friendship or more, until the end of time because of the pain we've shared. My mind doesn't often wander here to the memories that I've forced myself to forget. That can of worms is closed, sealed with superglue, and buried under 9 feet of cement. Chapter 3. When I get to the apartment, I'm greeted by a medium-sized package on the doorstep. Tessa's name is scribbled in black marker, telling me immediately who it's from. I shove my key into the door and gently kick the box inside. The lights are off, so I know Tessa's not home from work yet. I'm tired, and I get to sleep in tomorrow. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, my classes begin later than the rest of the week. I'm very much looking forward to it. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my favorite days of the week because I can lie in my bed in boxers and watch television. It's a simple, somewhat sad luxury, but I enjoy every second of it. I kick my shoes off and line them up while yelling Tessa's name through the apartment just to make sure she isn't here. When she doesn't respond, I start to undress in the living room just because I can. Another simple luxury. I unbutton my jeans and push them down my legs. I even kick them off, letting them flop to the floor. I even leave them there. I'm feeling slightly rebellious, but mostly really exhausted. After a second thought, I pick up my pants, shirt, socks, and boxers from the floor and carry them into my room, where I toss them on the floor to clean up later. I need a shower. The handle to the shower in my only bathroom sticks almost every time I turn it on. It takes at least 1 minute for the water to wend its way through the pipes. Our super fixed it twice, but it never stays. Tessa even tried to fix it herself a few times. Turns out repair woman isn't her thing. At all. I laugh at the memory of her soaked body and how mad she was when the water burst from the pipe. The metal handle went flying across the bathroom, putting a small hole in the drywall. A few weeks later, it broke again when she turned the shower on and ended up yanking the flimsy handle off the wall. The result was her getting sprayed in the face with ice-cold water. She screamed like a banshee and ran out of the bathroom like she was on fire. As I listen to the water moving through the lines and take a quick piss, my mind drifts through the day. How fast my classes seem to go by. How surprised I was when Dakota and Maggie came into grind. I still feel weird about seeing Dakota, especially with Aiden, and I wish that I would have had some time to prepare. I haven't talked to her in a few weeks, and it was hard to concentrate when she was wearing such revealing clothing. I think it went pretty well, though. I didn't say anything completely embarrassing. I didn't spill coffee or stumble over my words. I wonder if Dakota felt awkward and like she was forcing conversation with me, or if she barely notices the tension anymore. She doesn't reach out to me much. Ever, really. So I have no idea how she feels or where we stand. She's never been very vocal about her emotions, but I know she's the type of girl who holds a grudge for life. She doesn't have any reason to have negative feelings toward me, but my mind immediately goes there. It's a little weird to me that we went from talking every day to barely at all, to radio silence. After she called me to end our relationship, I tried to keep our friendship afloat, but she's given me little help. I miss her sometimes. Hell, I really fucking miss her. I got used to not seeing her when I moved from Michigan to Washington, but we still talked daily, and I'd fly out and visit her every chance I had. Even once I got busy with college. When she moved to New York, she started becoming distant. I could tell something was off, but I kept hoping it would get better. Still, with every phone conversation we had, I felt her slipping away from me more and more. Sometimes I would just sit and stare at my phone, hoping that she would call back and want to hear about my day. Just ask one question or give me more than a quick 2-minute rundown of her day. I hoped that maybe she was just adjusting to her new life. Maybe she was going through a phase, I thought. I wanted her to get the full experience of her new life and make new friends. I didn't mean to take anything from her, I just wanted to be a part of her life like I always had been. I wanted her to throw herself into her dance academy. I knew how important this was for her. I didn't want to be a distraction. I tried to be as supportive as I possibly could, even as she began to carve me out of her life. I played the role of supportive boyfriend as her schedule became fuller and fuller. I had always played that role well, ever since we were kids. I'm comfortable in this role, just like the nice guy. I stayed patient and ever so understanding. The night that she called to give me reason after reason why our relationship wasn't working, I still nodded along on the other end of the line and told her it was okay, that I understood. I didn't understand, and her reasons felt flimsy. But I knew there was no changing her mind. And as much as I wanted to fight for her, I didn't want to become a burden to her. I didn't want our relationship to become another thing she had to fight. Dakota spent her life fighting, and I had managed to be one of the few positive forces in her life, and I wanted to keep it that way. I was frustrated, and in a way, I still am. I don't really understand why she couldn't spare a little time for me when all of her Facebook updates were pictures of her at different restaurants and nightclubs with her friends. I missed hearing about her day. I wanted to listen to her brag about how well she did in class. I missed her raving about how she couldn't wait for an upcoming audition. She was always the first person I went to with anything. That began to change after I met Tessa and started getting closer to my stepbrother, Harden, but still, I missed her. I don't know a lot about dating, but I did know that this wasn't it. Suddenly, I realize the bathroom is filling with steam from the shower while I'm just standing here staring at myself in the mirror and reliving the failure of my only relationship. I finally step into the shower, and the water is scalding like it's lashing out against my skin. I jump back out and adjust the water. I connect my phone to the iDock and turn on my sports podcast before I get back into the shower. The announcers' voices are deep and loud as they bicker over the unnecessary politics surrounding hockey. I try to pay attention to who they are complaining about, but the sound keeps cutting in and out, so I reach out and shut it off. My phone falls from the dock and lands in the sink. I reach over and get it out before my usual luck kicks in and an invisible house elf turns on the water. Having a house elf, preferably Dobby or his clone, would be ideal. Harry Potter was one lucky kid. This bathroom is way too small for another body, elf or not. It's tiny. Microscopic, really. With one low sink, with a wonky faucet planted next to a small toilet that I can barely fit on. Whoever designed this apartment didn't do it with a 6-foot-tall guy in mind. Unless said 6-foot-tall guy liked to bend his knees to get his head under the shower stream. The warm water works at my back as I continue to torture myself and think about Dakota. She takes up prime real estate in my head, and I can't seem to get her to move out. She looked so good today, so damn sexy in those shorts and sports bra. Did she notice that my body has changed since she's seen it last? Did she see that my arms have grown thicker and my stomach finally has the lines of muscle that I've been working toward? Growing up, I was a chubby kid. My hefty build was often the topic of conversation in the crowded hallways of my high school. Lordy Landon, they called me. Don't let Landon land on you, they would joke. Maybe it sounds so damn stupid and childish now, but it bothered the crap out of me when the meatheads would walk behind me chanting it. That was only one of the many flames of the hell that was high school. It was nothing compared to what happened with Carter, but I'm not going there tonight. The more I try to remember about our encounter at Grind, the more my brain screws with the memories and jumbles them. I couldn't tell what Dakota was thinking. I never could. Even when we were young, she always had secrets. It was appealing then, mysterious and exciting. Now that we're older and she broke up with me with a little real explanation, it's not so fun. I stare at the seaweed green shower tiles and think about all of the things that I should have said and done during those 5 minutes. It's a vicious cycle, going over what I could have said and then reminding myself that it's not a big deal, then back to freaking out. I stare at the wall, remembering her standing in front of me earlier today. I wish I could have read the pages behind her almond eyes, or found some words hidden beneath her full lips. Those lips. Dakota's lips are something else. They are plump and the perfect shade of soft petal pink. Their rosy color has always driven me crazy, and she's mastered the art of using them perfectly. We were only 16 when we messed around for the first time. It was our 2-month anniversary, and she had just adopted a puppy for me. I knew my mom wouldn't let me keep it, and she had to know it too, but we tried to hide it in my closet. Dakota often did things that she knew she shouldn't, but her intentions were always good. We would feed the little gray furball the best food from the little pet shop down the street. He didn't bark much, and when he did, I would cough to try to hide the sound. It worked for a while until he grew too big for my small bedroom. After 2 months of captivity, I had to tell my mom about the dog. She wasn't nearly as upset as I thought she would be. However, she did explain the cost of upkeep of a puppy, and when I compared that to my measly check from the car wash I worked at sporadically, it didn't add up. Even with the tips added in, I couldn't cover a vet bill. After some tears and protestations, Dakota finally agreed. To ease the pain, we geeked out and watched all of the Lord of the Rings movies. We binge-drank Starbucks Frappuccinos and complained about paying $5 a cup. We ate Twizzlers and peanut butter cups until our stomachs hurt. And I drew circles on her cheeks with my fingertips, the way she always liked, until she fell asleep on my lap. I woke up to her warm mouth and her lips tight around my cock. I was surprised, half awake, and aroused as hell, watching her take me between her lips down her warm throat. She said she had wanted to try it for a while, but was nervous. She worked her mouth around me perfectly, making me come with an embarrassing quickness. She learned that she really liked to please me this way, and she started doing it almost every time we hung out. I liked it, of course. Hell, who am I kidding? I loved it. I couldn't remember how I ever thought jerking off was an enjoyable way to orgasm. It was nothing compared to her mouth. Then later, her soft, wet pussy. We went from oral sex to fucking pretty quickly. Neither of us could ever get enough. I didn't have to please myself until I moved to Washington. I missed everything about her, including the intimacy we shared. It's not so bad, jerking off, I suppose. I look down at my cock hanging, the hot water running over it. I wrap one hand around the base, teasing my own tip with my thumb the way Dakota used to with her tongue. With my eyes closed and the warm water pouring over me, I can nearly convince myself that it's not my own hand stroking myself. In my head, Dakota is on her knees in front of my old bed in Washington. Her curly hair was lighter before, and her body was just starting to really tighten up from all of her dancing. She looked so good. She always has, but as we grew up, she just kept getting hotter and hotter. Her mouth is moving faster now. Between that and the sounds of her moaning in my head, I'm nearly there. My body begins to tingle from my toes to my spine. I lean my back against the cool tile of the shower wall, and one of my feet slips and I step sideways, losing my footing. A string of words that I don't use often spits from my lips, and I grab on to the checker print shower curtain and pull. Click, click, click. The damn thing gives way, tearing at each plastic ring. It falls, taking me with it. I yell again, and my knee hits the edge of the tiny tub as I fall backwards, slamming hard against the porcelain and getting hot water shooting into my face. Shit! I exclaim. My knee feels like it's already beginning to swell up, and my arms feel like jello as I grip the edge of the tub and try to lift myself out. The door bursts open, startling me, so I go and smack my head against the bottom of the tub. Before I can cover myself, I see Tessa, whose hands are flying around like a hippogriff.
"Are you all right?"
she shrieks. Her eyes dart over my naked body and she covers her eyes.
"Oh, God, I'm sorry."
"What the hell?" Sophia screeches as she enters. Great, now she's in here too. I reach for the ripped curtain and pull it over my naked body. Could this get any worse? I look at both girls and nod, trying to catch my breath. My cheeks are on fire, and I would rather disappear into a pile of dog shit than be curled up in the bathtub, naked, with one leg hanging over the edge. I push my free arm down onto the wet floor of the tub and try to pull myself up. Sophia pushes past Tessa and grabs hold of my arm to help me. Someone kill me. She quickly tucks her brown hair behind her ears and uses both hands to pull me up. Please kill me. I try to keep the curtain covering my inappropriate bits, but it falls just as I stand up. I reach down and grab it again, just as nonchalantly as I can manage. Anyone listening out there, if you won't kill me, at least make me disappear. I'm begging you. Sophia's brown eyes have a green tint to them that I hadn't noticed before. Or maybe they don't, and I'm just dazed from the fall. I look away from her, but I can still feel her eyes on me. I try to focus on the toe of her shoes. They're brown and pointy and remind me of the shoes Harden always wears. You steady now? Sophia raises one dark brow. Could I be any more embarrassed? I don't think so. It wouldn't be humanly possible. 30 seconds ago, I was masturbating in my shower, and now I'm naked and embarrassed. This entire ordeal would be hysterical if it were happening to someone else. Sophia's still looking at me, and it dawns on me that I haven't answered her question. Yeah, I'm fine. I sound even smaller than I feel. Don't be embarrassed, she says quietly. I shake my head. I'm not, I lie, and turn my chin down and force a laugh. The worst way to make someone feel less embarrassed is to tell them not to be embarrassed. Tessa looks at me with concern and is about to say something when a loud beeping noise pierces the air, making me flinch. Could this get any worse?
The chocolate is burning!
Tessa shrieks and disappears from the bathroom, and the room feels even more compact than usual. The mirror is foggy and everything's dewy, and Sophia's still in here. She smiles, and her finger touches the center of my stomach, just above my belly button, with long, black nails. I like the way they look, touching me. Dakota never has long nails because of dance. She complained about it often, but she loves dance more than nail art, so natural nails it is. You shouldn't be. The compliment comes out as a purr, and my body responds. Sophia's finger is still making a slow line down my stomach, and I'm confused, but I don't want her to stop. Her fingers draw along the bottom of my stomach, just above where the curtain is covering enough for my cock not to show. My mind is trying to figure out why she's touching me like this, while I'm simultaneously trying to keep my cock soft. I don't know her that well, but I do know that she's much bolder than the girls my age that I've met. She doesn't have a problem cussing out the television during Master Chef, and she clearly doesn't have a problem touching my soaking, naked body. The trail of hair from my belly button down to my groin seems to be entertaining her as she brushes the tip of her index finger over it. Did she say something? Ah, yes, she did. She said, "You shouldn't be." When did the smoke alarm stop beeping? What does she mean by that? I shouldn't be embarrassed? I nearly busted my ass in the bathroom while jerking off and was found naked on the shower floor. Of course I'm embarrassed. And just like that, the spell of whatever she is doing is weakened and self-consciousness creeps back in. I look at her, at the reflection of her dark hair in the foggy mirror. Thanks, I weakly reply. I clear my throat and continue. I took quite a tumble. I laugh, getting closer to finding the humor in the whole thing. Her eyes are warm and her finger is still touching me, slowly tracing and teasing. It's not awkward, but I don't know what to say or do. Before I have to decide, she pulls away with a smile. I turn from her with flushed cheeks and wipe my hand across the mirror. She stands still, her back against the towel rack. I stare at my reflection and wince when my finger touches a small but deep cut just above my eye. A trickle of blood is running down my forehead. I reach behind Sophia and grab a hand towel, dabbing at the torn skin while I make myself a promise to never try to get off in a tiny shower unless I'm wearing armor or something. I apply as much pressure as I can stand to get the bleeding to stop. With Sophia still in the bathroom, should I be making conversation with her or something? I don't know what to think about her touching me. I don't know the etiquette when it comes to things like this. Is this the norm for young, single people? I've only had one girlfriend ever up until now, so I can't pretend to know about this type of thing. I can't pretend to know what this girl is thinking or what she wants. I hardly know anything about her. I met her back in Washington briefly, when her family moved in near my mom and Ken. I know that she's a few years older than me, and that she likes her friends to call her by her middle name, Nora, which is something I constantly screw up, only to have Tessa correct me with a scowl. I know that she always smells like sugar and candy. I know that she comes over a lot because she doesn't like her roommates. I know that she keeps Tessa company when I can't, and somehow they have become friends over the last few months. That's pretty much it. It sounds like a lot when I list it out, but all of those things are superficial, nothing more. Oh yeah, she just graduated from culinary school and works at the same restaurant as Tessa. And now I can add that she likes to touch naked, wet stomachs. I look away from the mirror and back at her. Are you staying to make sure I don't have a concussion? I ask. She nods, giving me a toothy smile. The corners of her eyes crinkle up and her lips look incredibly plump, especially when she licks over them with her tongue. Wet lips and those eyes. She's lethal. She knows it. I know it. Obama knows it. She's the kind of woman that will chew you up and spit you out, and you'll love every minute of it. Her index finger is tapping on her bottom lip, and I'm still quiet. She can't be hitting on me. I'm confused. Not complaining, just confused. I appreciate your concern, I say with a wink. Did I really just do that? I look away quickly, horrified that my stupid brain would have me do such a dumb thing. Winking? I'm not the winking type of guy, and I'm pretty sure that I just looked like the biggest creep ever. Nora's eyes meet mine and her lips part. She steps toward me, closing the admittedly small gap between us with one stride. My body reacts and I retreat, my lower back resting against the sink. You're so cute, she says softly, and her eyes roam over my chest once again. The word cute stings a little coming from someone who oozes sex appeal. From the curve of her lips to the curve of her hips, she's pure desire. I'm always the cute one, the nice one. No woman has ever fantasized about me or called me sexy. Nora lifts her hand toward my face, and I flinch slightly, wondering if she's going to slap me for imagining her naked more than once. But she doesn't slap me, probably because she can't actually read my mind despite how exposed I feel. She raises her finger to the tip of my nose and taps it. I close my eyes in surprise, and when I open them, she's already turning away. Without a word, she leaves the bathroom and walks into the hallway. I rub my hand over my face, wanting to erase the last 5 minutes. Although, maybe keep the last two. When I hear Tessa ask her if I'm okay, I roll my head back, take a breath, and close the door, clicking the lock into place. The shower curtain is destroyed, and the tiny room looks like it's been hit by a tornado. The plastic rings from the curtain are scattered across the floor. The bottles of shampoo and Tessa's body soap are all over the place. As I clean them up, I can't help but start to laugh at this whole thing. Of course this would happen to me. The clothes I brought into the bathroom with me are wet. The shirt has a huge water spot on the back, but the shorts aren't too bad. I pull them on and grab the wet clothes to take into my room. My dark hair is drying now, only the roots are still wet. I rake Tessa's purple hairbrush over my scalp and use a comb over the little bit of facial hair I've been growing lately. Her vanilla lotion is a little greasy, but it smells good, and I always forget to buy my own. Luckily, there's a Band-Aid in the cabinet, and I stick it over my cut. Of course, it's not just a normal Band-Aid. Tessa bought Frozen-themed Band-Aids. Yay! It just keeps getting better! When I step into the hallway, Nora's laugh is as loud as Tessa is silent. She hasn't laughed since she moved here. It bothers me, but I've learned that she needs to deal with this breakup on her own terms, so I don't push her. She's not one to take other people's advice, especially when it comes to Harden. And somehow, thinking of him reminds me I have a shift tomorrow morning. Crap. Which means I need to get up early tomorrow so I can run. So I toss my clothes into the laundry basket in the hall and walk to the kitchen to get some water and say goodnight to the girls. You know, try to reestablish some normalcy. A nothing-to-see-here moment to end the night on. Tessa is sitting on the couch with her feet propped up on a pillow, and Nora is lying on the rug with a pillow under her head and my yellow and maroon Gryffindor house blanket wrapping her up like a burrito. I glance at the TV. Cupcake Wars. The usual. These women watch nothing but the Food Network and the teen dramas on Freeform. Admittedly, I do like some of those shows. The one about the teenage demon hunters is my favorite. That and the Foster Family one. You guys need anything from the kitchen? I ask, stepping over Nora's fuzzy sock-covered toes peeping out of the bottom of the blanket. Water, please. Tessa leans up and pauses the show. A woman with curly black hair is frozen on the screen, mouth wide open and hands in the air. She's stressed over burned cakes or something. Do you have anything besides water? Nora asks. This isn't a grocery store, Tessa teases. Nora pulls the pillow from under her head and tosses it at her. And Tess smiles, actually nearly laughing before catching herself. It's too bad. She has a great laugh. Besides Gatorade, I don't know what we have in the fridge, but I hold up my finger and go to check it out. Inside the fridge, rows of bottles are lined up perfectly. Yes, Tessa even organizes our fridge. And it turns out that we have a lot to offer a thirsty soul other than water. Gatorade, sweetened iced tea, orange juice, I call out. I jump when Sophia's voice comes at me from up close. Ew, I hate Gatorade, except the blue one, she says as if she's personally offended by my favorite drink. Ew? How can you say that, Sophia? I give her a disbelieving look and rest one arm on the open fridge door. Easily, she smiles, leaning against the counter. And stop calling me Sophia. If I have to tell you again, I'm going to call you George Strait every time I see you. George Strait? I can't hide my laughter. Out of every name you could have said, that was one... Well, that's just random. She's laughing too, a soft laugh with sharp eyes. It suits her. Nora, not Sophia, shrugs her shoulders. George is my go-to. I remind myself to look up George Strait to see what he looks like. I'm sure I've seen him before, but I haven't listened to country since I was a kid. Nora's hair is in a ponytail now. Long curls cover one shoulder, and she's wearing a cut-off shirt, exposing her stomach and skin-tight capri leggings. To be honest, before I was too busy concentrating on my exposed skin to really notice hers. Is she flirting with me? I can't tell. Dakota always teased me about being clueless when it came to the advances of women. I like to think of it as uncontaminated, not inexperienced. If I were hip to all the possible advances, I would probably turn into one of those guys who are obsessed with how women perceive them. I would question everything I said or did. I might even become one of the dudes who soak their hair with gel, spiking the ends like that guy from the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives show Tessa and Nora watched last night. I don't want to hide my sci-fi books or pretend that I can't recite every Harry Potter movie line for line. I don't want to try to be cool. I'm pretty sure I'll never be cool. I've never been cool, and I'm okay with that. Besides, I would rather not compete with the millions of perfect men out there, and would instead keep my books on my shelves and maybe get lucky enough to find a woman who likes them too. Not having any blue Gatorade, I tried to tempt her with my favorite, the red one. "You're so quiet," Nora says when I hand her the bottle. She examines it, raises a brow, and shakes her head. I stay quiet. "Better this than water, I suppose." Her voice is soft, not demanding at all, despite the fact that she has a serious Gatorade-hating problem. My mind curiously wonders what other opinions she has. Are there any other sugar-saturated drinks that she holds unnecessary grudges against? I found myself wanting to know. While I'm preparing in advance my defense of all my favorite drinks that she might hate, she twists the top from the red bottle and takes a drink. After a moment, she says, "Eh." She shrugs her shoulders and takes another swig as she turns to walk away. She's weird. Not in a she lives in her mom's basement and collects Beanie Babies weird. She's weird as in I can't figure out her personality. And I definitely can't figure out what those awkward pauses or random touches are supposed to mean. I usually read people so well. But instead of cracking the code of romance, I grab my water from the fridge, go into my room, and finish my essay, then go to bed. Chapter 4. The morning came quickly. I went to bed around 1 and woke up at 6. How many hours did doctors recommend again? 7? So I'm only like 30% off target, which, yeah, is a lot. But I've gotten used to staying up late and waking up early. I'm slowly becoming a New Yorker. I drink coffee daily, I'm starting to get the hang of the subway system, and I learned how to share the sidewalks with the stroller moms in Brooklyn. Tessa has learned all this too, right along with me, although we differ in one maybe significant way. I give less of my money to the homeless I see on my way to school and back. Tessa, for her part, gives away half of her tip earnings on the walk home. Not that I don't care or help. I just prefer to give coffee or muffins when I can, not money to feed possible addictions. I understand the hope Tessa feels when she hands a homeless man a $5 bill. She truly believes he will buy food with it or something else he needs. I don't, but I can't really argue with her about it. Maybe she has the better idea here, but I know a lot of her attitude comes from her personal connection with the homeless. Tessa found out her dad, who wasn't around in her life, was living on the streets. They got to know each other a little bit before he succumbed to his addictions and died a little less than a year ago. It was really hard for her, and I think helping these strangers heals a small part of that open wound. For every dollar she gives, she's rewarded with a smile, a thank you, or God bless you. Tessa's the kind of person who tries to pull the best out of everyone. She gives more of herself than she should, and she expects people to be kind, even when it's not the most accessible part of their nature. I think she sees her small mission as some kind of redemption for her failed relationship with her father, and even with Hardin, who is one of the most difficult people I know. Maybe she couldn't help those two.